Hi, welcome back to AR Zone. I'm your host, Carolyn Bailey. These continuing interviews on intersectional veganism and related issues are in association with VegFest UK. Roger and I are very excited to welcome back our good friend, Christopher Sebastian, in today's interview.
Oh, not him again, surely.
Stop it.
Okay.
No, this stays in. Come on.
Okay. Sebastian is a long-time vegan and social justice advocate. He focuses on examining the complex relationships between speciesism, racism, and queer oppression, and he organises discussions relative to exploring the intersectionality of veganism and other movements for social justice. Sebastian, welcome back to our series on intersectionality.
Thank you so much, Carolyn and Roger.
You're very welcome. Sebastian, you've been working really closely with VegFest UK to organise the Pro-Intersectionality Summit at Brighton this weekend. Would you please tell our listeners what they might expect this year?
Yeah, I talk about this very briefly in an interview that I did with Casey at Vegan Publishers, but I'm really excited to talk about it again. I had the opportunity with Alan and Tim at VegFest to organize the Intersectional Summit on Saturday. And they were really kind enough to give me kind of creative control over that. And I wanted to explore things that were relevant to the world in general and especially relevant to animal rights. I wanted to have conversations around, like political conversations around, like, you know, the type of political uncertainty that we're living with right now in the U.S. and the U.K., and specifically the situations around Brexit, which worry a lot of British people, and the election in November of 2016 that really surprised us, and a lot of people felt very disempowered by that. A lot of people were, like, you know, were really taken aback and just unsure about, like, how to proceed personally, because it affects us individually, and what it also means for the movement toward animal liberation. So yeah, I wanted to organize the Intersectional Summit around that. And when I chose the speakers, I chose them with that theme in mind and told them, like, my sort of vision, if we can call it that. And their response was nothing short of phenomenal. Like, you know, they gave me their talks and I was so impressed and so excited for it that I can't wait personally to sit down and listen to all of these incredible incredible people speak.
Who are the speakers this year, Sebastian?
This year, I wanted to like definitely have a focus on women in the movement, because there is underrepresentation of female voices. So I definitely reached out to, like, to people that I knew were, like, really, really smart, really bright and articulate, and had some revolutionary views. Maureen Janine, who runs the YouTube channel A Privileged Vegan, she's going to be speaking. Laura Schleifer, she is another voice that I think is amazing. She's going to be speaking as well. And Laura is herself an educator professionally. Ruby Hamad, she is a feminist author. She writes for, I'm going to mess this up, I think that it's The Daily Life in Australia. She's going to be joining us by Skype. And Eshi Zuri, who is a transgender activist who is vegan and has some really incredible, important things to say about Black liberation and white supremacy within, like, a vegan framework. So, like, you know, all of them have enormously different approaches, even though some of their topics overlap. But what's really important to me is that, like, you know, I don't walk in lockstep with these people. They have important ideas that, like, you know, that I need to learn more about myself, that I think, like, we collectively need to be exposed to. And, you know, and they're, like, you know, and they're prepared to, like, to do these presentations and do it in a way that is going to be relatable to the widest audience possible. So I'm really excited for seeing what they deliver. And you can definitely see their talk topics in the program. So, I'm looking forward to, like, an excellent Saturday.
Absolutely. It sounds fascinating. And you're speaking as well at the summit. Your talk this year is something very different and something very exciting as well. Would you please elaborate a little bit on your own talk?
Yeah. Like, at the last minute, I actually joined the discussion. I'm doing the last talk of the day. Like, I didn't want to do like a traditional lecture. I don't even like to call my talks lectures. It's more of a presentation, but like even a presentation doesn't accurately fit the description for what I'm doing this year. I wanted to I wanted to help people kind of understand the link between colonialism and imperialism and speciesism, because I think that just from my observations, that's not entirely clear to a lot of people yet. I continue to see conversations on social media where people quite haven't grasped that concept, and indeed they're a little intimidated by it. They're really scared about talking about that. And I experienced a lot of initial rejection of the idea. I read a conversation last week where someone, was just like really, they were really put off by the idea of of talking about veganism within the context of white supremacy. Because, I had used the phrase, which is like a phrase that I always like beat on, given to us by bell hooks. But I talk about it in the within the framework of imperialist, white supremacist, cisgender, capitalist, heteropatriarchy. And and that's already a mouthful for people to listen to, especially if they don't understand what it is. And it's easy to feel threatened by that, especially the phrase white supremacist if you're a white person. And I just read a comment from someone who said that white supremacy doesn't have anything to do with veganism because all cultures exploit animals. And my response to that is that if that's your approach to to veganism, if that's your approach to anti-speciesism work, then it is it's a very limited approach because you're only telling part of the story of animals. We need to fully engage the historical legacy of of the structures that have been put in place. You can't tell the story about animal enslavement and animal agriculture without including the Industrial Revolution, because industrializing animal agriculture was in our human history was a critical moment. And and that's specifically a white supremacist framework that was introduced and globalized by Western society. Yes, all cultures do exploit animals, but when you look at places like China, with the emergence of the Chinese middle class, Chinese people were not given historically to a very meat-heavy diet, but now they are because they're mimicking habits of consumption that have been adopted by Western society. So as we see other non-Western cultures experience their own growth, we've kind of exported this lifestyle and turned this luxury product into something that everybody should aspire to have. And I also think that it's really misguided for people to to want to exclude the influence of white supremacy on animal agriculture. Because if we look at this in relation to Carol Adams' work, reading The Sexual Politics of Meat, which I also bring up very often as a very heavy influence on me, that is it's absurd to say similarly, well, what does patriarchy or what does feminism have to do with animal rights? Because women also eat animals. Of course they do. But to ignore the influence of toxic masculinity and patriarchal domination would only tell part of the story. So we're trying to draw in all of the aspects of this. So in my talk, which was your original question anyway, I had looked up and dusted off the essay Marrakesh by George Orwell. And Orwell has become kind of popular again, even though he's been in the grave forever. But people are rereading 1984 and putting it back on the bestseller list for completely unknown reasons. I dusted off his essay, which was actually originally it's a journalistic piece, so it appeared in newspapers. But Marrakesh unintentionally really draws our attention to speciesism in a way that Orwell never intended. But Orwell himself, who had always been critical of colonialism, he had written this as a criticism of colonialism. But there's so much animal imagery in there. And it talks about the relationship between racism and the invisibility of black and brown faces in relation to animals and animal bodies. And I thought that it was absolutely fascinating that we can look at this like 100 years later and literally trace the influence of white supremacist society and white supremacist culture on, like, you know, on black and brown bodies and on animal bodies as well. But I don't want to be in a position of teaching this to other people. So we're going to, like, you know, if people are able to, I encourage them to read the essay themselves before they come to the talk. If they are not able to do that, that's perfectly fine. Because we're going to, like, talk about it as a group together, and we're going to, like, put as part of the presentation, we're going to put quotes from the essay up on the screen and allow people to participate, like, you know, at their leisure, if they want to, if they feel comfortable, and talk about the connections that they see between race, class, and species, instead of me, like, telling them what to see myself. Like, I want people to be able to engage and analyze this type of literature and see that, like, I'm not just making this up off the top of my head. Like, you can read this and see the thoughts of, like, you know, of people who are directly related to colonizing and like during that time even, and see the influence for yourselves. So, like, you know, I'm looking forward to people actually being able to critically engage with that information, and, you know, and create their own takeaways rather than me telling them what their takeaways should be.
I'm really excited. I love that your talk is interactive. I think that the best way that we can learn and we can understand an issue is to participate in the conversation as opposed to sort of listening to a lecture. So I'm really excited to see how it goes.
I am too. And we'll all find out, because I've never done something like this before. So, like, this interactive talk is going to take place on Saturday, March 11th at VegFest UK in Brighton. Like I said, I'm the last one of the day, and that's at 5:00. So yeah, like, we'll see who comes, and, like, you know, and we'll see what people take away from it. I'm myself looking forward to learning a lot from the participants and from, like, the other people that are speaking. And also, there is going to be a panel right slap in the middle of the day, and the panel is going to be a little bit different too. There is going to be audience participation, but we're approaching this panel as more of an open conversation between the guests that are, or the speakers that are coming. So it's going to be Laura, Maureen, and Eshi. You know, and I'm going to, like, softball some things out to them, and not even softball, like, you know, just, like, throw some really hard, difficult topics that are really sensitive for people to talk about, and let them go with it. And, like, you know, and let them have a conversation amongst themselves, and, like, you know, that we're all, like, participating in, like, you know, in a sort of more voyeuristic fashion. But yeah, like, you know, we're just kind of there watching these people engage with, like, you know, with these topics and hearing what they have to say. I'm looking forward to disagreement. I'm looking forward to, like, you know, to people being able to respectfully articulate their ideas and back their ideas up with, like, you know, with sound, well-documented information, because all of them are so experienced in the things that they're talking about. And they're so wise that I can't imagine that this is going to be anything short of, like, a radical experience for me, you know, and the people who are participating in VegFest.
Fantastic. I can't wait to hear how it goes.
So, hi, Sebastian Roger here. How are you doing? Are you well?
I am. I'm pretty good, despite all of the, like, you know, all of the excitement leading up to this weekend.
Oh, good. I was actually going to ask you about the panel, but you've answered that one, so that's good. But before my main question, I want to ask you a really serious one, and I can invite a single word answer if you like. But are you wearing those sex on legs socks?
Of course I am, Roger.
Oh, good.
I don't interview without the socks anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I didn't think you'd let us down. Okay.
Yeah. No. They're quite successful. You can't them this time, but trust me, they're there.
Oh, we've got vivid imaginations, don't you worry about that. So you've talked a lot about decentering whiteness in the vegan animal movement, and you've also experienced quite a lot of pushback to that idea. I mean, I personally feel deeply saddened that this pushback is happening. It's so ignorant and uncalled for. In fact, I've got a new slogan: the animal movement, it never fails to disappoint. So so this is the question: what do you think we can do within and for a movement that is not actually as radical as it thinks it is?
Oh boy, that's a huge question. Like, so far as like decentering whiteness, of course, like you said, I have talked about that a lot. What I want to do, what I would love to see happen, and I'm very interested in hearing what other people have to say about this as well. But I'm interested in like in white people having conversations about race within their own communities, because that's not what I that's something that I don't see enough of. We have this aversion to talking honestly and authentically about race, and it goes really deep. I think, like, Carolyn, and you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I think that in Australia there was at least a formal apology for the treatment of Aboriginal people, and I think that something similar also took place in Canada. In the United States, that never happened, and like, you know, that's quite appalling to me, as an American and as a Black person, that, like, you know, that there is this continued erasure of Blackness and of anti-Blackness in, like, you know, in our culture. And it permeates every aspect of our culture. And so when I hear people who are vegan say, I've never experienced racism, usually they're white people, you know, I've never experienced racism in the vegan community or in the animal rights community. And it's really, like, to me, that's sort of naive to think that it wouldn't be there, because, again, like, you know, like, anti-Black racism does permeate every part of our society. So why would it not be a part of our community as well? Like, being vegan doesn't absolve you of, like, you know, of being racist or being able to perpetrate anti-Black racism. And it doesn't, like, you know, it doesn't automatically absolve you of like, you know, of perpetrating sexist aggressions or trans misogyny, like all of these other types of, like, you know, oppressive things. So there does need to be, like, in order for us to create the type of community that is going to be successful in liberating animals, we need to understand that, like, you know, that this is an important aspect of it. And we kind of, like, we're very afraid of addressing it. And, like, you know, and we want to sideline this issue because it does make us so deeply uncomfortable. So when you see anti-Blackness, which doesn't always manifest itself in, like, overt actions, like, you know, calling someone the N-word, that's obvious racism. You know, racism doesn't always announce itself, even though we like to think that it does and that it should. Like, you know, like when we see casual racism, when we see, like, you know, casual acts of anti-Blackness or like, you know, see where people are kind of erasing Blackness, we need to call it out. I want to see, like, you know, more white allies actually calling it out. The way that things are going right now, like, you know, we have a deeply, like, you know, oppressive culture. And we can't be successful for the animals if we don't, you know, if we don't take control of that. And I think that now is a time where we're able to see a very meaningful change in that direction or toward those ends. You know, people, because I said before, we do feel very disempowered by our current political situation. So it feels more like more of us have a stake in this, everyone who's vegan and people who are not vegan as well. And so, you know, when the stakes are higher, like, you know, it kind of creates a sense of community, a sense of solidarity, because, like, we're all in this together. So yeah, like, you know, I see, like, even, like, in very dark times, like, I do see opportunities for us to turn that around and use that for, like, you know, for our own political gain, for our own liberation and the liberation of other species communities as well.
Yeah, thanks for that. Picking up on one thing you said, I'm one of those people who tend to think that you can't really have a sexist and racist vegan. I think you can have a sexist and racist, you know, 100% plant-based eater. But I think if people understand the origins of veganism as a social movement and an idea, and I always insist that it's intersectional, even if that word didn't even exist in those days, I'm not quite sure how you could have a sexist vegan.
Yeah, I know. Like, I think very similarly to how you perceive it, Roger. But I understand why people, like, you know, will disagree with that. Like, you know, it's like people, like, the thing is, like, we don't really understand, and I had said this before too, I've been on record saying over and over again, like, we don't collectively as a group understand oppression. We don't understand how it operates. We don't understand, like, you know, what it is. I will actually be talking about this later on this week online. So, you know, look out for future posts online to like, you know, to kind of enhance this discussion. But yeah, like I actually saw, just to give you an example, like I saw a comment that someone left on a public wall or a public post from a page, a vegan cooking page. And this was a person who identified as vegan and identified very strongly with the movement for animal liberation. And, you know, they had said, like in their response to someone else, that, you know, as the most advanced species on the planet, dot, 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 you know, talking about, like, our need to curate the planet for these other species. Like, that is, like, you know, that is an intensely speciesist thing to say. And like this person likely doesn't even realize that they're perpetrating speciesism, like in their, you know, in the way that they're communicating ideas to non-vegans right now. Like, you know, the idea that we are the most advanced species on the planet is patently absurd. It's scientifically, like, you know, like false, given the our understanding of, like, you know, animal intelligence. And like, you know, and there's just no real meaningful way for us to measure the intelligence or the quote-unquote advancement of other species, because we're only measuring them against our own understanding of their intellect ourselves, which is, like, you know, inherently going to be flawed. Plus, I think that it's absurd for us to think that we're very advanced at all, being that, like, most of our advances are putting us on the road to, like, you know, to killing ourselves and, like, you know, and bringing about societal collapse as quickly as possible. So yeah, like, we don't really have an understanding of oppression and how it operates, least of all, animal oppression. And, you know, so yeah, we don't understand speciesism. Like, we probably don't have a very good grasp on racism and on sexism. So I do think that it makes you a very poor vegan if that's how you like to think of yourself. But if we're going to be responsible allies for animals, we need to work on that. We need to understand that. And we need to understand how speciesism is connected to racism and sexism and all of these other, like, you know, all of these other isms that are part of the hierarchy. We need to abolish the hierarchy itself, not try to remove animals from the hierarchy and keep the darn thing intact, because that's going to be, you know, that's never going to work. That's like, and, you know, on its face, that's a premise that just doesn't, like, you know, that doesn't work or is going to yield a good result.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's a great answer. And yeah, I mean, like, we're just not as radical as we think we are. Going back to, I agree with you about oppression, and we've got a poor understanding about that. And also this thing about, you know, advanced. Leslie Cross argued that veganism was central, integral to the moral evolution of humanity. And I think that's really true. And I just think that we don't understand, and we don't take on board, I think, the radical origins of veganism. Veganism is a very big idea. I just wish more people would be open.
Yeah.
So thanks for your answer, yeah. Sebastian.
No, absolutely. And I agree with Leslie Cross on that, too.
Sebastian, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. It's always a pleasure to welcome you back. Good luck on the weekend. I'm sure everything will go wonderfully, but I look forward to hearing from you about how it all goes. And I also wanted to take this opportunity again to thank you for everything that you're doing. I think that your work is fascinating, and I think that what you're doing is just so important. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Carolyn. Thank you, Roger, too.
Yes, thanks a lot. And not that guy again.
Just as maturity, no member of the animal kingdom ever did a thing to me. So I don't need red meat or white meat.